Not only have I preached in this building before, this pulpit looks familiar to me. I think this is the one from 10th and Rockford, isn't it? Yeah. Yo, before I begin my sermon, I just want to say how happy I am for this congregation. Yo, 10th and Rockford and 29th and Yale have long been two of my favorite congregations. And to have these two congregations come together to form this one congregation, that is a real blessing for Tulsa. I'm sure I don't have to tell you, you have a fine eldership. You have a very sound and experienced gospel preacher in Dalton, and a membership that can't be beat. I've known a lot of you for many, many years, and I can tell you right now, I consider you very good friends. And I think your future is very good. And I think this congregation is going to be a blessing for many years. You know, there's something that really troubles me. Matter of fact, I think I'd use a term that greatly disturbs me. To see how much things have changed in this country in my lifetime. Yo, skepticism seems to be growing every year, and that bothers me. And I know it's fueled by and large by a lot of outspoken atheists. And I could name some of them by name, there's no need to. But they delight in attacking the Bible, attacking the church, attacking Jesus Christ. And they just proudly proclaim their disbelief in God. Like we would proclaim our belief in God. They proudly proclaim they do not believe in God. And they let people know about their scorn of Christianity. That disturbs me. But you know what disturbs me even more? The growing number of people who seem to agree with them. They're influencing a lot of people. There is an anti-Christian attitude growing rapidly in this country. And we're often portrayed by those people as narrow-minded. We're hate-mongers. You ever heard that one? We are ignorant. We're bigoted. And quite honestly, we are behind the times. And this bothers me too. I've heard many parents, and they've lamented to me before, how hard it is for their kids to be accepted among their peers, like in the public school system. You know, many young Christians have to deal with the fear of being viewed as out of step. And I'm talking about out of step with their peers. And in a way, I think a lot of them feel kind of ostracized. They feel kind of left out. Now, why is all this happening? One of the main reasons is Christianity is presented as out of date and no longer fashionable. And do you know what's at the very core of this misguided belief? Many actually believe that Christianity cannot be defended. Well, I've got news for them. Nothing could be further from the truth. Today, you and I have a simple mission to expose that false claim that Christianity is indefensible. If someone asks me to defend my Christian belief, I'm more than happy to do so. Glad to do it. And where do I begin? Let me tell you where I always begin. The life of Jesus Christ, and particularly his resurrection from the dead. Now, why do I begin here, particularly his resurrection? Jesus' resurrection from the dead is why we believe what we believe. Now, let me elaborate a little bit on this. Are you aware of the fact that of all the world religions, Christianity is alone in standing or falling on an event in history? The resurrection of Jesus Christ. We're unique in that regard. And by the way, who says so besides me? The Apostle Paul. Let me read these words to you. 1 Corinthians 15, beginning in verse 14. If Christ is not risen, then our preaching is vain, and your faith is vain. That literally means empty, doesn't have any value. And he continues, yea, and we are found false witnesses of God, because we have testified that God has raised up Christ. And if Christ has not been raised, your faith is vain, and you were yet in your sins. You realize Paul is showing here how to falsify Christianity? If Jesus Christ did not resurrect, your faith is vain. He's showing how to falsify Christianity. And why would he do that? Because he quickly adds in verse 20, but now is Christ risen from the dead and has become the first fruits of those who sleep. You realize what Paul is saying here? Christianity stands or falls on this event in history. If Christ did not resurrect from that tomb, Christianity is false. But if he did, Christianity is confirmed. Everything associated with the life of Jesus Christ, his teachings, his holy word, the gospel that we're supposed to go into all the world and preach, all of it's tied into the resurrection. Matter of fact, that's the gospel, part of the gospel. Read 1 Corinthians 15. What is the gospel? The death, burial, and the resurrection of Christ. If the resurrection of Jesus Christ occurred, that means he was the Son of God. And that means that every word he spoke is true. Every single word. Romans 1:4 tells us that Jesus Christ was declared to be the Son of God by his resurrection from the dead. So the question is, can we prove the resurrection? Can we do this? If we can prove his resurrection, nobody, no matter who they are, no matter how hard they might try, they cannot falsify the Christian faith. Can we do this? Yes. And how do we do it? By looking at the evidence. To begin with, and I'm about to tell you something you already know, but I'm saying this to make a point. His tomb was empty. He was gone. And 2,000 years later, to this very day, nobody has been able to produce the corpse of Jesus Christ, the deceased body. Boy, don't you know the Roman Empire would have loved to have been able to have done that? The Roman Empire detested Christianity. And you know why? Here's the main reason. Rather than reverencing and venerating the emperor, they worshiped the resurrected Christ. And Rome tried everything to stop this. Intense persecution, imprisonment, crucifixion. Now I got a question for you. Why did they bother to do all that? All Rome had to do to prove that the resurrection was a myth was to show that Jesus Christ did not raise from the dead. Exhibit A. The body of Jesus. Why didn't they show the body of Jesus? They couldn't do it. And it's too late now. By the way, I've told people that from time to time if I'm talking to someone that's skeptical. Well, maybe today they'll find out that no, you're too late. You're 2,000 years too late. If the people who opposed Christianity in the first century couldn't produce the body of Jesus, you're not going to do it today. You might as well give that thought up. Think about the Jews. On the day of Pentecost, one of their high holy days, they were told by Peter that they, by wicked hands, had crucified the Son of God. but God has raised him up. See what Peter was saying there? You crucified your Messiah, but you don't have to worry. God has raised him up. They were guilty. Now, if this was not true, what do you think the Jews would have done that day? They weren't very far from the tomb of Jesus Christ. They could have showed them the body. Told Peter and the rest of the apostles, come here, we got something to show you. But of course, they didn't do it, did they? And matter of fact, 3,000 of them were converted that very day. Now, have you ever heard this argument? I have. Well, maybe Jesus never lived. Maybe he was just a made-up person. So that means his death and resurrection never really occurred. I heard an atheist say that some years ago on the radio, and I just shook my head. Have you ever considered how absurd that position is? I want you to consider some things tonight. Early on, Christianity grew at an accelerated rate. It was quite amazing, and did so amongst some of the most intense persecution any group had ever endured. I've heard a lot of historians make that comment. Probably Christians in the first century was the most persecuted group that ever walked the earth. Probably true. The Roman Empire went after them. And boy, the Roman Empire was powerful. The unconverted Jews didn't like them. The pagans, they didn't like Christians. They had enemies on all sides, but nothing could impede the church's growth. A man who lived back in the second century by the name of Tertullian, he wrote these words, famous quote, you've probably heard these words, the blood of the martyrs became the seed of the church. You know what he was saying? No matter what Rome did, even when they killed people, the blood of the martyrs became like a seed of the church. It just kept growing. Nothing, not even intense persecution, could encumber the growth of the church. Now, I want you to apply a little logic here. The reason the church was growing so rapidly amidst all these persecutions was the resurrection. People had seen the resurrected Christ. If Jesus never lived, the resurrection never took place. So I ask you, what was the engine that drove that unstoppable growth of the church in the first century? Amid such brutal, cruel, vicious persecution, only one thing could have inspired the growth of the church. Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Jesus never lived. I can't think of an argument but being that absurd. But let me give you some more evidence for the resurrection. Jesus predicted his own resurrection. In John chapter 2, Jesus said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. And John tells us he spoke of the temple of his body. He's referring to his body there. Now, there might be a little symbolism there in figurative language. Maybe people that day didn't quite know what he was talking about. But later, Jesus got even more exact, even more detailed. Listen to these words in Matthew 16, beginning in verse 21. From that time forth, Jesus began to show unto his disciples how he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. Now, how clear is that? A little later, he even got more detailed. Now I'm reading from Matthew 20, beginning in verse 17. And Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples apart and said unto them, behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be betrayed unto the chief priests and the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death and shall deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify him, and the third day he shall rise again. Could Jesus have made that any clearer? Could he have made that prophecy any clearer? Included any more details? And the inspired word tells us that Jesus' resurrection was remembered by the apostles. They remembered what he said. They remembered these words. That's why the church grew. Let me give you something else to consider. The change of Saul of Tarsus. I want you to think about this one. Some years ago, there was a man by the name of Frank Morris, and he was a skeptic. He was a very brilliant man, and he thought he could expose Christianity as being false. So he really started investigating, really started digging. But you know, he changed his mind, and he wrote a book entitled, Who Moved the Stone? You can figure that out, referring to the resurrection. And one of the main things that changed the skeptic's mind was the amazing change in the life of Saul of Tarsus. Think about it. Saul persecuted the church. Saul described himself as being exceedingly mad against the church. But he changed. He changed from being the number one enemy of the church in the first century, and believe me, he was that feared. He was the number one enemy of Saul of Tarsus. Suddenly, he became the number one advocate, the number one defender. Well, maybe he gained something by this, and I'm talking about physical things. Well, let's see what he gave up. Let's see, he gave up his wealth, he gave up his authority, gave up his position. He gave up everything. Well, he had to gain something. What did he gain? Well, he became impoverished and destitute and persecuted and in prison. And ultimately, he was executed. As far as this world is concerned, he didn't gain anything. There had to be a reason. Morrison was an honest man. And this is what he concluded. After all that study and research, only one thing could have caused this change. He really did have a dramatic encounter with the resurrected Christ. Nothing else could explain it. One day on the road to Damascus, the resurrected Christ confronted him, and it changed his life forever. Changed his direction forever. Again, proving the rock solid evidence we have for the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I want to add this one. The almost overnight change of the apostles. I'm talking about the original 12, not counting Judas, of course. On the night that Jesus was arrested, how would you describe the apostles? They were cowards. They ran and hid. When confronted, Peter denied he even knew who Jesus was. You know, Jesus predicted this would happen. Mark 14 and verse 27, he spoke these words to the apostles. All of you will stumble this night because of me, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will scatter. He's quoting from Zechariah. They were afraid, they were cowards, but something happened later. What was it? Something caused them to change. Suddenly they had the courage of gladiators. What was it that changed them? Only one thing. They encountered the resurrected Christ. And from that point on, they were ready to die. And most of them did. Dying for that cause. Now, there's an argument that's sometimes presented along this line. I've had people say this to me when I talk about the apostles were willing to die no matter what happened to them. Here's the argument. A lot of people have died for lies. Maybe the apostles died for a lie. A lot of people have died for lies. You know, that's true. You remember some years ago a man named Jim Jones had over 900 followers who drank cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, committed suicide. They died for a lie. Another man named Applewhite founded a cult called Heaven's Gate. And the night that that comet, remember Hale Bopp, the night that it passed closest to the earth, many of his followers committed mass suicide. So yeah, we have to admit that does happen. Some people die for a lie, and I could give other examples, but I want to show you a major difference here. Those people who followed Applewhite and Jim Jones and others, they died for a lie, but they thought it was the truth. They were deceived. They thought they were dying for the truth. If Jesus Christ never resurrected from the dead, if he never appeared to the apostles, they died for a lie, knowing it was a lie. And I'm here to tell you, nobody's going to do that. Human nature will not permit you to do that. Would you do it? I know you wouldn't do this because you're a Christian, but suppose you're going around spreading a lie, and then somebody says, Gil, you're going to die for that. I guarantee you he'd be just like me. Well, wait a minute now. If you're going to kill me, I'm going to tell the truth now. And all of them were willing to die. The apostles were persecuted in prison. They were executed, but they never denied that they saw the resurrected Christ. Peter one time even said, we ate and drank with him after he rose from the dead. Absolutely nothing could quiet their voices. Why? They saw the resurrected Christ. One more thing, and then we'll close. You know, someone might say, well, do we have good evidence for all this, good written documentation? Many times I have heard this term used. They refer to all the documents written about Jesus Christ as the manuscript explosion. I want to read this to you. Never before or since has there ever been an explosion of written documentation about an event like the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That event was unparalleled in history. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of documents, manuscripts, translations about the life of Jesus Christ were written, copied, and circulated, some of them within a few years of his death. No ancient event matched this event, and I'm talking about documentation. No ancient event was ever documented like this event. Today, I want you to know your faith is rock solid. You were like the wise man who built his house upon the rock. And your faith has been verified, it's been confirmed, it's been substantiated, and mainly by one single undeniable event in history, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And the wise people today follow him. If you're following Jesus Christ this very night, you are a wise person. And maybe I'm speaking to you tonight, and in some way you need to respond to the invitation. Well, we want you to do that, and we would encourage you to do that. If you are here tonight and you do have a need, won't you come now, while together we stand and sing.